Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
We're back. It's 12 after the hour. Thank you very much for hanging out with me. Thanks for being part of my day. My pleasure, as always, to continue to be with you. And we're glad that our good friend Ken Davis is back with us. Kenneth C. Davis is a good friend, longtime Brain Trust member, one of the two resident historians, and both of them are this hour, by the way. Ken Davis is first, and Ken, as you know, is the author of Don't Know Much About History, the whole Don't Know Much About series, including mythology, including other books. He's got some wonderful children's books. You got to check those out if you have children or grandchildren. And of course, America's Hidden History is a watershed book. And then I think this is the new one, A Nation Rising. I think that's the most recent one, isn't it, Ken?
Well, A Nation Rising is the most recent new book. It's now available in paperback, but there's also a new edition of Don't Know Much About History, which is the book that really started it all off.
That's the flagship right there.
That's the mothership, and it's just out now in a new hardcover edition, revised, updated, expanded.
All right.
Most of the expansion has to do with covering the last 10 years of American history, which, mm-hmm. as we know, has been quite extraordinary.
We're living the Chinese curse. May you live in interesting times, and that's what that's about.
Live in interesting times.
Ken, thanks again for hanging out with us on this Labor Day. Talk to us a little bit about the origins of Labor Day.
Well, it really is a holiday that we think of it as the last weekend of the summer, and it's a picnic, and it's a barbecue, or it's a walk in the park, but this comes from a time when labor was no picnic, and I don't mean that glibly. The holiday was created or inspired in 1882 by a New York City labor union that wanted simply to give their people a day off that fell halfway between the 4th of July and Thanksgiving.
Right.
It was about the only other days off that working people had back then, and we're talking about 6-day weeks, 12-hour
right.
days, no minimum wage.
His name was Matthew McGuire?
Well, there's actually some dispute. There's a Matthew McGuire and a Peter McGuire,
yeah.
and one took credit for it, and the other one said he took credit for it. So there's I don't want to get into that contest, but the point was, in New York City on September 5th, 1882, about 30,000 union workers and their families marched. And they were trying to, first of all, have a day off, but also organize, get basic rights, 8-hour day, decent wage, and
yep.
end to child labor. And this was one of the great shames of this period in our history. And it didn't come to pass. And this was a very, very violent time, of course, in American labor organizing.
Mm-hmm.
There were very violent strikes. They were often put down with the full force of the government.
The federal government, in the case of the Pullman strike.
Mm-hmm. That's right. And the Pullman strike is the most important one in terms of Labor Day, because Grover Cleveland sent 12,000 federal troops to Pullman, Illinois, which is the home of the Pullman Car Company, the biggest company in America at
right.
the time. And it was a panic. They called the Panic of 1893, so they were shutting down factories, and they were throwing workers not only out of work, but they lived in company housing very often, so they were being thrown out of their homes as well. So this was a dangerous and desperate and sometimes violent time. Well, Cleveland broke that strike, and then he came back in 1894 and signed the Labor Day Bill. It was not because he was a great friend of labor,
right.
but he was trying to win some labor votes. He thought that giving them this holiday would do it.
And 84 was an election
cost.
Year.
96 was the election year. He signed the bill in 1894. And he tried to win re-election in 1896. He wasn't even renominated. That was the year that William Jennings Bryan made the famous Cross of Gold speech,
mm-hmm.
And he got the nomination, and Cleveland was finished. But the real more important point was that everything that labor was working for at that time, the 8-hour day, the end of child labor, a decent wage, none of that happened. They got this holiday, which was more or less meaningless to them. But none of the reforms that they were looking for happened until 1937 under the first Fair Labor Act under Franklin Roosevelt during the Depression, the New Deal. So it was really another 50 years before these basic things like the eight-hour workday came into effect and the end of child labor law. You look back at some of the records of children working in the mines and factories, and it was shameful.
Right. But, you know, Ken, we look at what Henry Ford did. I mean, he gave his people a better wage. He gave his people a shorter work day. Did he lower it to the 10-hour work day? Did he go with the 8-hour? I've forgotten which one. But he, I know he raced without any requirement by the government. He was an example of an industrialist who improved the lives and the compensation of his employees.
You're absolutely right. He did something that was earth shattering at the time. He paid his workers $5 a day. The year that he did that is in my book, and I'm not going to have that one on the tip of my tongue, but that was a revolution.
I think it was like 1911 or 12 or something like that.
Yeah, and it wasn't because he was such a great friend of labor himself, but he wanted his workers to be happy. He didn't want them to unionize, so he thought that was one reason.
Right.
Pay them enough and they won't unionize, and Ford was always strongly anti-union.
Mm-hmm.
But there's something else, Jim, and it's self-interest, and it makes so much sense, and this is enlightened leadership. He knew that the only way that these guys are going to be able to afford to buy my cars is if they make a decent wage. He was creating his own market, and of course, for years and years after that, Ford workers bought Ford, so that if you went to the Ford plant, all you saw was a lot filled with Model T's, and you know that you could get every color as long as it was black.
Right. No, exactly. And I think he was a model for the way companies work are today, the way companies treat their employees today. They don't repress employees. They pay them the kind of wage that they can afford to pay to operate their business. And there's just a much better relationship today than there was in those days. I mean, my dad was a member of a union. My mother was a member of a union back in the mid part of the last century. And, you know, the unions served a purpose in those days, but less, I think, today because of things that have extended, the behavior of Henry Ford. Well, I mean, go ahead.
I think you're right. I think you're right, and there are a lot of factors at play here in terms of there probably, we could say safely, there's another war on unions or a war on labor today. It's a lot less violent, of course, but it's pretty vitriolic sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Unions were the victims of their own success in a way.
Hold on to that thought. We got to take a quick break, folks. 20 after, we're going to come back, talk a little bit more about Labor Day and labor after these messages. Stay with us.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.